Well, it is a pleasure to welcome one of my longtime jazz radio colleagues. He's known as the Dean of Boston Jazz Radio, Eric Jackson. Eric, it's really great to have you with us today on WBGO.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me, Rhonda. This is a real pleasure, real pleasure.
Well, you know, I'm glad to have this opportunity to speak with you because your radio station and the entire city of Boston are celebrating your 40th anniversary on WGBH. And the president and CEO of the station, John Abbott, said WGBH is so grateful to have Eric as the voice of jazz radio in Boston on our airwaves since 1977, welcoming listeners to a diverse and dynamic genre of music with unmatched authority. So, Eric, congratulations on your 40th anniversary.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Does it seem like it's just like a blink of an eye?
Well, yeah, it does seem like it's moved by pretty quickly. Although, you know, I'm sure, as you know, there's been a lot of changes to the music. A lot of those heroes that we listened to when we were first starting off are no longer around. And there's new exciting folks and new technologies that we're dealing with. So, in one sense, it does seem quick, but on the other hand, there's so much different about the world of jazz now, too.
Tell us about your dad, your father.
Well, in 1947, my father went to a station in Providence because they were looking for a vocalist, and he went to audition for their house band. And when he was sitting, when they talked to him, told him how to have a seat, he sat down, and these two guys came out, and they were talking about jazz, and my father got into the conversation. He didn't realize that the interviewer had come out and was standing behind him, and he walked up to my father and said, "Well, do you know anything about jazz?" And my father said, "Well, I know a hell of a lot more than these two do." So they didn't hire him as a singer, but they hired him as an announcer. So about July of 1947, he became the first African-American radio announcer in New England.
So that must have been an inspiration to you. I mean, did you think about having this career because of what your father had done?
Not at all. Not at all. I was coming to Boston because I wanted to go to med school and I wanted to be a psychiatrist. And there was an ad in BU's campus paper and they were looking for announcers. And I said, "Oh, this would be fun to do while I'm in school."
Well, your father, was he the one who introduced you to jazz?
Well, you know, in those days, a lot of homes only had one radio. We were living in a rather small house, and the stereo was in the living room, but you basically could hear it throughout the house. My father was in charge of the stereo. So that's what we listened to in the house was jazz. He was a huge Duke Ellington fan and a friend of Duke and the members of Duke's band. So not only do I hear a lot of Duke and other jazz, I met certainly a lot of the musicians who were in Duke's band as I was growing up, too.
Did you ever meet Ella Fitzgerald?
Yeah, once. I was hosting a concert, and the thing that struck me is how timid she was off stage. I mean, I literally just wanted to shake her and say, "Ella, it's just little old me. You can talk to me. My goodness." She was like, "Oh, yes. Oh, thank you. Oh," you know, it was so shocking. I do have a funny story, if you want to hear it, about my father and Ella. When my father was on the air, when he was doing work in radio, he was asked to host a concert of Ella's in Providence. And after the concert, my mother came backstage, and she saw Ella. Ella had on a fur coat. And my mother said to Ella, "Oh, that's a beautiful fur coat." Ella turned to my mother and said, "Oh, baby, he's going to get you one," pointing to my father. So when I hosted that concert, I told Ella, I said, "Ella," and I told her that story, and I said, "But I just want you to know that he got her several." So, excuse me. But yeah, I just had waited to tell Ella that story someday.
You've done so many interviews, and I read that you have conducted more than 3,000 interviews with jazz artists, Dizzy Gillespie and Ornette Coleman, Wynton Marsalis, just to name a few. And first, I just wanted to ask you how you were able to come up with that number, 3,000. Have you cataloged all of your interviews?
Oh, I wish. I wish. I wish. No. One of the program directors a while back actually helped me figure. There was a time when I probably did an interview just about every night I was on the air. There was a time when the two major jazz clubs here in town would call and book, like, literally months in advance on my show. So it used to be a time if you hadn't booked an interview on my show by Labor Day, you probably weren't going to get in on the air that year, because it would be that booked that far in advance. So as I said, a former program director came up with that number. I can't remember. It was a process he went into. That's the 3,000 I did here, but I did a number of interviews even before I was here, too.
What interview stands out to you? Do you have any that are especially memorable?
I'd say interviewing Ornette Coleman was a treat. It was interesting to talk to Ornette because, you know, his thinking process is a lot different than a lot of people's, I'd say. And the ideas that he talked about, there was one thing that happened during the interview. The interview seemed like it was going along fine. And then I mentioned to him a book that I'd heard about through Don Cherry. The book was called The Sufi Message of Hazrat Inayat Khan. And this one volume of this 12-volume series was on music and sound. I mentioned that book. Ornette said to me, "Oh, you've read that book?" And it was almost like I dropped the password. And, you know, I was an initiate by that time. And so, you know, he just opened up. He started talking about music and healing and the power of sound and all kinds of different things. But it changed up the whole interview, just mentioning that book.
Was there anyone that you interviewed who really surprised you? You know, like you had an idea of them in your head, and then when you met them and had a chance to have a conversation, you found out that they were completely different than what you expected?
That's an interesting question. I can't really say that I can remember anybody surprising me like that, although I'm sure that there have been some people like that, but I can't really say I remember any of those folks. I certainly enjoyed a lot of them because we seemed to click, even if I had never met the person before. But I can't really say I remember the shy one.
I first remember hearing you on WBCN, and everybody I knew, every night we used to listen to your show. You know, it was an automatic thing. You turn on Eric. And I think what everybody loved about your show was that you played a great variety of music. I don't remember everything correctly, but it seemed like you played some jazz, but you really seamlessly mixed in R&B and some of the popular artists of the day. So you really created a welcoming atmosphere with the music. And one of the things that I found so amazing about your show is that you never seem to repeat yourself.
You know, when they hired me at that station, and this is pretty much an exact quote. This is what they said to me: do a 60% jazz show with a heavy emphasis on other forms of black music, but play some white music too. That's what they said to me when they hired me. So, and white music was defined as music by white groups that generally black people didn't listen to.
What is it that you enjoy the most about being on the air?
I enjoy the process of listening to so much music. I also enjoy the process of meeting the musicians, whether it's doing an interview or just meeting them and getting a chance to talk to them. I mean, you know, I'm still a fan after all these years, so it's exciting to meet so many of these musicians and get a chance to talk to them, even if it's not an interview.
And you've also done quite a bit of work in jazz education, right? What kind of courses have you taught?
Well, I actually, for the most part, I teach a class at Northeastern University called The African American Experience Through Music. And it's a class that goes from West Africa up to today. We deal with blues, spirituals, gospels, hip-hop, jazz. So we deal with all kinds of music as it's related to history. So we deal with the music as it appears on the historical timeline.
Your show on WGBH is called Eric in the Evening, and your 40th anniversary celebration has been dubbed Eric All the Time. You must be, like, maybe a little bit overwhelmed with this outpouring of love that your friends and fams are showering upon you.
Isn't that something? I mean, you know, when I first met you all those years ago, who would have thought that?
Well, Eric, as I said, I first met you during your days at WBCN. I was actually an intern at that station back then, working in the news department. And it was actually at your wedding that I first met Charlie Perkins, who was the program director at WBUR at the time. And he asked me that question, did I know anything about jazz? And long story short, I ended up getting a job at WBUR and stayed there after I graduated for a few years. And then I came here to WBGO in 1979. That was 39 years ago. So ultimately, Eric, it is all thanks to you. If I hadn't met you and been inspired by you, I probably wouldn't have had the career I have today. I might have gone in a completely different direction. So thank you, Eric Jackson, for all of the great work you've done over the years for this music and for this vast community of jazz lovers all over the world. I'm sure there are thousands, perhaps millions, who just like me have been inspired by you. And it's really people like you who make the world a better place. So thank you, Eric. And again, congratulations.
My pleasure, Rhonda. And thank you for inviting me to speak with you today, too.